You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is a podcast from ComediansComedian.com.
This is the Comedians Comedian Podcast. Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith, and I'm incredibly pleased and proud to bring to you today. That's a terrible way to start a sentence, but we're just going to go with it. I'm very, very pleased, very proud to bring this conversation to you. This is with Dara O'Brien, who will be known, I think, to almost every single one of you. He's been the host of Mock the Week for 20 seasons or more, and he's a fantastic live performer in his own right. He does huge tours of massive solo shows. He's one of those guys that's just like, right, this is the show, no support, this is the whole thing. I'm doing 45 minutes and then I'm doing an hour. And he's just brilliant. He's well known as a brain as well as a comic, but someone who manages to make all of the myriad clever things inside his head very, very funny and accessible. If you haven't seen any of his work, I suggest familiarising yourself with some of his stuff on either computer games or homeopathy. You can YouTube either of those bits or get them from other sources like Vimeo, can you? I don't know. I sort of refer to YouTube as Google, but it's not the same thing, is it? Already, you see, this is the sort of ludicrous offshoot conversational digression that Dara himself would not bother with, such as his enormous memory palace and mental control and so forth. It just really, really kind of him. I met him in his hotel room in Edinburgh while I was doing The Stand, and he was playing the Edinburgh Playhouse, and we went on to have a hilarious night out on the, I think it was the Saturday night, with me and some other wonderful comedians who'd been at The Stand or thereabouts, and we went and had a ridiculous night out where we ended up, Dara has a running joke of whenever anyone, no, he has a running response to a running joke. So the running joke is this, and it's probably funny the first time it gets done to you or the first time you do it to someone, but obviously for someone as well known, as much high profile as Dara, people do this to him quite a lot of the time. Apparently this is a joke that people really enjoy doing to Danny Dyer, but I think it must be in a very different spirit. And so what you do is you go up to the famous person and you go, excuse me, mate, can we take a picture? And they go, yeah, yeah. And then you hand them your camera because you're intending them to take a picture of you. And it's like saying, hey, I recognise you. No, actually, I don't. So you can see how in the right circumstances that'd be quite funny. Dara's stock response to this is to completely play along with it, take their camera and then turn the flip the picture-taking mode. So as he takes a picture of them, he's actually taking a picture of their grinning face. This then became, as you can imagine, an enormous running joke. So myself, Dara, Adam Hess, Ian Sterling, Gareth Much, Gareth War, sorry if I've forgotten everyone, I think that was the main team, just got hammered in a bar called Pivo in Edinburgh and had a wonderful time doing that to each other, to other people, encouraging other people to take pictures of us doing that. And as a result, we had a brilliant night out of which no photographs exist. So it's quite refreshing in many ways. Anyway, that's more rubbish than I normally spiel at you at the intro. But what a lovely man is my point. And this is really... It's been a while since there was an episode I really didn't want to release. This is such a useful episode, useful for comics, fascinating, I'm sure, for non-comics. I really didn't want to release it. I really wanted to just sit on this one, hence I've been dragging my heels. But no longer. Here it is. This is the brilliant Dara O'Brien.
Right.
That was great. You started. Yeah, that's very unusual. Sorry, yeah. The natural host.
Yeah, I felt that we'd had enough dead air. And really, this show had to get going. So, sorry.
So tell me about...
Did you have music or something going to
No,
play?
There will be. There'll be music. I'll edit that in later. But this one, I might just start straight from the off. I enjoyed that.
A cold opening. You know, it's very difficult to do a cold opening in anything these days.
Yes. Yeah,
we did a... documentary recently, and we wanted to start it relatively cold, and then somebody in the large broadcasting organization said, no, it's really important that you we queue it up in a really obvious way, what's going to happen in the next while. So they wanted to put everyone who's in it at the very start, but the line they got sent was, because me interviewing somebody, and they said, if you just do this, is the line we think would be the perfect one. This came from a relatively senior person. He said, in my line of work, it's a great pleasure in my line of work that sometimes I get to meet somebody who is literally from another world. And I remember looking at this going, are you sure they're from another world? which world are they from?
This person literally
I've been talking to. Yeah, so cold openings are difficult to do. So yeah, I think you should push for, you know, because people shit gets introduced too often. Like the guy in the continuity says it, and then it's in the first frame of it, and then they want to make even the driving trip. We want to start the driving trip, myself and Ed did.
Yes.
With vintage footage. We want to cut straight to the guy from the 1940s whose journey we were mimicking, going, I wouldn't advise traveling down the Pan American Highway in black and white. So you're going, oh, this is intriguing.
Yeah.
And they said, that's great, but could you first put a picture of you and Ed driving?
Yes, okay. I remember when they started, when they did Down the Line. Do you remember that on radio? Yeah. It was loads of people from the Fast Show, and it was created as if it was real. Yes. And then the very first episode, someone said, "Comedy Now from the makers of the Fast Show." Come on. So, well, you never do a cold open when it comes to your touring shows. You are renowned for walking on and doing lots of great crowd work.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You never walk out and go, here's the jokes.
No, you do some jokes before you do the crowd work. You do the jokes which are known as, trust me, I'm a comic jokes.
Okay, go on.
The actual structure of the show is music starts, I do the voiceover, I do the hello, welcome mm-hmm. to. Right? And you still occasionally get people who go... it's very satisfying when they say, why did you get a guy to do it? And then you go, because I play 100 different theatres and I'm not going to pay a guy to sit in a room saying the words Nottingham King's Theatre.
Besides, what if we have a venue change and I don't have the right
interest? And then have to fucking queue them all up like, oh Christ, where are we now? Where is the one of Alan Dedicote, the voice of the balls, saying Aldershot, Alhambra? And then you come out and you do the intro stuff. But the intro stuff is actually jokes. You want short, punchy jokes at the very start. Because even though, and it is the term I always hold, which is, trust me, I'm a comic, which is the, hey, everybody, relax. They'll be funny.
Yes.
And here's some funny. So, you come out, not quite, da, 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 hit, bang, bang, bang. But there is an element of...
Yes. Now, I watched one of your DVDs only yesterday. Your opening gag was, yes, that was me doing my own introduction. I mean, that's one of those ones you kind of go, okay, this is definitely going to get a laugh because it's such a schism between the perceived status of the comic and...
Yes, it's an easy tension breaker and it gets a laugh. See, usually live, the reason that you do that is because for the second half, midway through, when you do it in the second half again, you do it very close to the curtain and then you just start peeping out of the curtain mid-sentence. You go, well, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back for the second half. And then you look around the curtain and go, it is still just me doing this. And it gets another big round of applause.
So what are your Trust Me, I'm a Comics on this?
Oh, God, on this one.
Your Crowd Tickler tour. Do you stick with the same ones on a tour?
Oh, no, on a tour. They're part of the show. It's not like, hey, I see I'm in blank. What about those, you know?
Yeah, those people from Shelbyville.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Name local sporting team are doing very well. No, it's a... there's a gag actually that I co-opted from which is the first gag on this tour, is a gag that I sort of feel guilty about doing because it was one I used to do in warm-ups, but it will end up going back into warm-ups again, which is, welcome to the show, don't worry if people are coming in late or something like that, because there are no rules here. There's one rule. If you're the kind of person who laughs on the inside, You're yes. fuck all use to me. And
is that yours, or are you saying
mine,
that's
mine?
No, that's I mine. Have seen warm-ups do that.
Oh, really?
I have, absolutely.
Fuck, that's in somebody. That's awkward. Unless they've heard me do it, because I've done it on Mock the Week for about 6 or 7 years.
Okay.
Or it might just be one of these things that people come up
yes,
with.
Yeah,
I have strong feelings that joke theft very rarely happens, and that, you know,
everyone just thinks, you're presented with the same set of circumstances, of course, aren't you?
Yeah.
There'll be people coming in late, there'll be people laughing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
silently,
and you want a general kind of introduction. So that is just a general warm up, like it's literally a warm up joke. And then you're into a thing about having not toured in 3 years and what has changed. Honestly, the first bit of material is just me screaming, "Where has all the pulled pork come from?" And that gets the first large recognition clap, and then you're into a thing. But it's a so you do a bit of those, and then you do the audience chat. Then,
okay.
You know, because even then, I feel slightly like it's in slightly earlier than I'd like on this one. It's just a balancing act of how much stuff is prepped and how much stuff is off the cuff, and, you know, when you should go from one to the other, like, because they're very different energies in how you do it. So I think you want to establish it first, and then you play the tightrope.
How many minutes are we talking of stage time before you start chatting to people?
There's about 5 to 10, I think.
Okay.
5, yeah. And then,
so it's not so much of a routine?
It wouldn't be a routine. No. And the things there are about a half dozen one-liners, and then there's a kind of a, yeah, and there's a couple of little half routines, and then we're into chat. And that even then feels to me a little bit quick by comparison to other shows. I mean, but then again, you rearrange the deck chairs differently on each one of these tips. And then it's a case of the contrived reason to be able to do audience chat, which is another thing which is always a chore to write every year. How can I justify asking these people what they do?
Yes.
Because even that becomes, I've been doing this 20 years, like whatever. I want to talk to them and I want to get the random elements into the show, but I remember writing a routine to kill off ever asking people where they're from, because I found myself just getting sick of going, "Oh, well, you're from France."
So what, you wrote a routine making out of comics who do that?
Yes, and about the whole notion that you're trading off these two facts that we have about everywhere. Oh, look, you're French. Well,
yeah.
You're arrogant and smelly or whatever. And to the way that I actually got the audience to shout the things back at me. And I would say...
to underline how little work the comic is doing
yes,
in that situation.
I would say Americans are, and they would shout whatever, you know, stupid, unfortunately.
Arrogant,
shout,
violent,
arrogant,
armed,
yeah, bad, yeah, poorly okay. travelled, yeah, yeah, warmongering, whatever. They would shout them back out again. The Dutch are tall was someone that
ooh,
I quite
nice.
Liked. The Dutch apparently are very famously tall.
I wasn't aware of that, but I'm thinking of my Dutch friends now.
They're an enormously tall people. The French, the Germans, whatever, and just how ridiculous it was. And then I would get some of the audience to think of character traits, random character traits, and as exotic and strange as they could come up with. And I'd have a couple of people doing those, and then I would have somebody. And the order, this is quite interesting. You have to do this in the right order. And then I would get somebody to name a faraway country that we have no actual baggage for. And you'd get Djibouti or Fiji or whatever. And I'd say, what? You don't think we know about the Djiboutian? My God, if I've heard once in midterm, the Djiboutians are, and I'd point to one person and point to the other person, and you'd get some weird mixture of a person. And the people of the one that was, because I think I stuck it in a book or it was on a DVD, the people of Fiji or Vanuatu. The people of Vanuatu are pompous and bouncy or something was the phrase. Or pompous and clairvoyant or something stupid, right? Two things. Let's say pompous and arrogant, right? The two similar. Right. Let's not say that. Let's say pick up a character trait. Let's say ticklish and arrogant, right?
Gotcha.
And so that was a funny joke. And I said, and I would wrap it all up by doing various messing around about this character mix. And then I'd say the weird thing is, you know, 10 years time you're going to be watching the news, and for the first time ever, a news story will appear about Vanuatu. And somewhere at the back of your mind, you'll go, "Ah, serves them right, the ticklish, arrogant pricks." And this year, God love them, Vanuatu had a tsunami or there was a flood, there was a civil war or something, because my timeline on Twitter filled with people going,
Oh my God. It
really bad that the first thing I think when I see this is,
oh no,
those pompous ticklish bastards. So,
I do like the idea that that's almost a time capsule joke.
Yeah. At some point. And there are things that explode, years later.
So you created that routine as a way of keeping it interesting for yourself, yes, or kind of taking away your ability to fall back.
I want the game of playing with the random elements that are coming in. Every year when I write, I try to write some show that includes a random suggestion from the audience, just because it's a huge spike of energy and they love it. And over the course of a tour, you'll develop a library of great
answers. By the time you do the DVD, part of the opening remarks will be, here's the question, here are your responses, one time in Folkestone,
yes,
and then that's the best one from the last.
Absolutely, yeah. And so, actually, no, there's a straight chat, which is the hello, who are you, what do you do, and, you know, that's just a straight conversation. But there's only one this year, but there have been others in other years, where I've either got them to tell me stories, or I've got them to suggest like a phrase that you would shout at a burglar to scare them off. It was one of them.
Yes, your questions are they're really provocative, like... intellectually provocative questions. They're like really unusual, very well chosen.
They're good. There's a process of you know, you sit down, you write, going, what can you ask this? Can you ask that? Can you, like, with the, and other people do this as well. I've seen Jason Manford do ones about what's the most painful thing in the world, because he had a story about them. You ask the question for which you have a topper.
Yes,
you ask
of course.
So that you have the routine at the end of it. In this one, we're writing a. I'm using four suggestions from the audience to write a top quality American cable drama to compete with the DVDs, you know, the box sets, the True Detectives in Fargo. So we have a detective who does this and a thing, whatever, and these are traits of. They're an improv game, I suppose, to a certain extent.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's just you want that random element thrown into it, and you do, because they're there as a resource. It is a difficult thing to come up with the right one. But when you come up with the right one, then it pays off 150 times.
Okay. And what other principles are there for the crowd work that you do with outside of the question, the more basic kind of where are you from?
Now, don't stop until you've got four big laughs.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's easy to, and four is not like isn't set in stone, but some number greater than just going, well, hey, what do you do? I'm an accountant. Bang, here's my accountant joke. Go to the next guy. You want more than that.
Yeah.
You want to go, for whom, what happens, where does that lead to? You want, because there's usually something in it which is unusual and something richer than that. So you want to have a decent amount of time on each person, because you don't want to get into, again, well, I'm a policeman, well, blah, 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 bang. It's to not be that nightmare image of a club comic who just has a line ready for each place or each job.
Yes, right? That nightmare image, you said, that's your nightmare, to be working within those.
No, I like clubs, I liked, but just being that polished in that this is just a carapel. I'm not interested. I am just looking. Because I remember seeing somebody, I remember seeing a club gig, and it was a compilation show in Edinburgh, and a comic we would both know went on and asked somebody what they did, and then there wasn't anything, and then did that kind of, oh, nothing funny in that, went to the next person who had another sort of technical job, and he said, whoa, well, nothing funny in that, like, and the first thing was like, funny, and then I think it was like four people down before we came to somebody, and then there was either he or then somebody came after and said, oh, what do you do? Somebody, and they were like a drugs researcher. Or he got panicked and just left it. And it was just been stank the thing. And then somebody came after it and said, oh, what are you doing? And said, well, I researched drugs. And it became about, oh, you know, you just trying out drugs all the time. And then I was on after it. And I came and said, yeah, you're in a white coat, aren't you? You're in a white coat in a lab. You're testing the effects in a peer-reviewed journal of this thing. And the guy just went, yeah, I mean, 10 minutes of people talking about how I was a guy who was like a lab rat who was like, you know, they used to pump drugs. In fact, it wasn't even that good. It was like, oh, I bet you love spliff. It was like, I bet you love spliff. Yeah. And I went, you're like a lab worker, aren't you? In a thing, in a white coat who does Western blots on different pharmacological projects. And he was like, so bad, which isn't say you don't misrepresent them horrendously. But you kind of say, I'm not saying that I get to the core truth of it, but there is a sitcom in all of these things. There is some sort of tension. If you can find it, you don't always find that, but like, I mean, and sometimes you find it and it's just irresistible. Every time I find a surveyor, you know, which is semi-regularly, you'll find a surveyor, I cannot, my brain just forces me back to, do you hold the thing or do you hold the pole? And do you swap over? Or is it the junior guy always has to hold the pole? Yeah. Or and is there, does he actually all day going, can I look through the thing? Can you hold the pole and I'll look through the thing and I'll write the stuff down? Or yes. Is that you really have to air in that? Like, and they generally are very interested. No, you got one guy has to stand 60 feet away.
Because you're actually pursuing a genuine inquiry into that, into the actual human, like the material elements
absolutely.
Of what that would be like.
Yeah.
Rather than, oh, you work in IT, you must be boring.
You're
going, what is that like, and give us some, like, I suppose you're landing very deliberately on specific facets of the job.
Yeah, but
you are giving them a lifeline as well, because you're actually respecting their ability they want to, presumably if they're the guy that holds the pole, they want to say, I hold the pole.
Like, so I'm dying to look through the thing. He's never allowed me to look through the thing. I don't know what it does. I don't know what the thing does. I'm just the guy who holds the pole.
Yes.
And that for me is just, that's Steptoe and Son as a show. Like, that is every day I go out and I hold the pole and I wonder what he sees. Like, how do I look to the thing he looks to?
So, as you can hear, we're getting along famously. Dara is such a nice guy, and I'm enormously grateful to him for coming along. And it reminds me as well something I was going to mention at the beginning, you know, this sort of photo gag. I have it on, I don't remember, I think I got this from the horse's mouth, but Lloyd Langford, who's a brilliant comic. I'm not sure if he's in Edinburgh this year. I know he's in Australia at the moment. Very, very funny comic, Lloyd, and I'll get him on the show as soon as he's back. But he was on tour with Greg Davis. He was doing support for Greg Davis, who, as we know, is some 6 foot hilarious. And he would frequently, as is the lot of the tour support, Lloyd would frequently be asked to take pictures of a fan and Greg on the fan's phone. And so Lloyd would deliberately frame out Greg's head. How wonderful. What a lovely joke. We'll get Lloyd along on the show soon for his undoubted comic prowess. He's been going 10 or 11 years, same as me, not just for that one little gag. So more from Dara in a minute. First, a couple of announcements. Now, listen, I meant to mention this several times. There's a very, very helpful person who you might have heard me mention on the show if you're particularly eagle-eared. There's a chap called James Quintin, known as JQ, known by himself as JQ. I mean, I really, if you do get in touch with him, do call him James. It'll wind him up. But no, JQ, he does a lot of help for me with, he gives me a lot of assistance with podcasting. And lots of people, obviously, lots of comics are starting doing their own podcasts. They get in touch with me. I then go, I don't know any of the stuff. It was all set up for me by a combination of people. And my hardware guy is JQ. So you can go to www.jamesquintin, that's Quintin, not Quentin, jamesquintin.co.uk/recording, and he is offering his services to record stuff for you. You know, people are making CDs and DVDs and you want the sound to be good if you're recording a thing, whatever level, he's a man to talk to. If you use the code word cake, then he will know that you've come from the podcast, and that's useful for me to be able to sort of repay him in kind, basically, for all his assistance. So look out for jamesquintin.co.uk/recording. A little advert now. There is going to be a fundraiser for the Free Fringe, for Peter Buckley Hill's Free Fringe, on the 30th of June at 7:30 p.m. At the Bloomsbury Theatre. Now, do you know what? I haven't written down that I've got a load of details here. It's a great gig. Stuart Lee, Nick Helm, Howard Reed, Robin Ince, Kate Smirthwaite, Alistair Barry, Jade Adams, and plenty more, and PBH himself. And that is going to be on the 30th of June at 7:30 p.m. What I didn't double check was the venue. It's normally in the Bloomsbury. Let's call it the Bloomsbury, but basically Google it. If you Google PBH fundraiser 30th of June, that's what I did. Tickets are £15 full price, and that all goes to help the PBH Free Fringe. So please, if you'd like to support it, then that is an excellent way of doing so with all of those brilliant names. A couple of gigs coming up. Let's try and do these in order. I'm just going to run through these very quickly and then mention two other quick things, and then we'll get back to Dara. So on the 2nd of July, I'm doing a preview. These are a lot of preview blurbs. The 2nd of July at Group Therapy in Manchester, I am doing a preview, a shared preview with John Luke Roberts. That's going to be brilliant. He's excellent. 4th of July at ARG Festival in London at 2 p.m. on the Saturday. I'm clashing with some other brilliant acts, so turn up and spin a three-sided coin. The 5th of July, I'm in Darlington with Deliso Chaponda doing a live podcast at 5:45 p.m. He is a fascinating a very interesting, very funny, very warm man, and has got a fascinating backstory and life in comedy. And then I'm doing my own preview again in Darlington on the 5th of July at 9:15 p.m. 6th of July, I'm in Kilburn at the Good Ship. The 7th is the final Soho pod. I've not been calling them to you, but that's what they've been in my diary. The final live podcast recording at Soho Theatre. It is, of course, with Adam Buxton. We've already sold a shedload of tickets. Someone got in touch on Twitter to say that they that the code wasn't recognised. Maybe they were spelling Faff wrong. It's F-A-F-F. Of course it is. I've been putting it in capital letters, and that seemed to work for me. So the 7th of July at Soho Theatre on Dean Street in Soho with the absolutely wonderful Adam Buxton, he of the Adam and Joe Show, the Adam and Joe podcast, all of his own sort of projects, an amazing amount on YouTube and online that he's got that you can watch. So seek out Adam Buxton's website. You will be bowled over by just how productive that man is. And on the 11th of July, myself and James Acaster are doing a little afternoon preview because it's my birthday on the 12th. So on the 11th, I'm going to do a nice preview with James, and then we're going to stick around and have some drinks and probably watch Omar Hamdi, who's on after us as well. And then Alfie Brown is after him. So this is all at the Top Secret Comedy Club. Go to thetopsecretcomedyclub.co.uk. It is one of, if not the most exciting new clubs in London. And it's run by a lunatic friend of mine called Mark Rothman. And it's just such a great atmosphere. That is going to be much earlier than they ever normally do shows. James Acaster's on at 1 p.m. I'm on at 2:30. They are completely free. So come along at 1 and see Acaster's show. Someone said something inordinately nice about his new show, a preview he did recently on the Facebook group. And I made him aware of that. He was very pleased. He is, as you know, if you listen to this show, Acaster is basically a comedy genius. And I can't wait to see that. So I've made him go on first to warm everyone up by being brilliant. And then I'll go on and do what I do. So come along to see that. It's going to be a lot of fun. 14th of July, downstairs at the King's Head with Joe Lycett. Brilliant, that's going to be fun. 15th of July, the Museum of Comedy in Bloomsbury. The 16th, I'm at Latitude Festival for a live podcast at 11 p.m. Not sure of the venue yet, but if you're at Latitude, get there early. Get there on the Thursday night. Come and see a live podcast. Guest TBC, but I've got someone quite exciting penciled in for that. And I'm on the comedy stage at Sunday. This coming Sunday, depending on when you're hearing this, but this is the Sunday of Glastonbury Festival. Come and see me. I'm on at the Cabaret Tent. I'm emceeing all day on Sunday. That's the big tent in the theatre and circus field. There's so much great stuff on there. So come and see me. Say hi if you see me wandering around Glastonbury. Press some money into my hand and say something cool. Let's see how many Glasto-type donations we can do that. It does have to be money. Please do not press something contraband into my hand and then shout police. Not cool, ConCom fans. Not cool. If you'd like to hear some extra content from this interview with Dara, some stuff that we basically talked for so long, I had more than an episode, so it's not better or worse stuff, it's just more of the same, then there's about 30 minutes worth of that or so. You can get that from comedianscomedian.com/Dara, D-A-R-A. You will need to put in your email address, that will sign you up to my mailing list, and that means I can basically send you one email a year, where I apologise for the fact it's only one email a year, but do that for me please. Join the mailing list and then you get exclusive access. And if you want to just get the stuff anyway, you can always sign up for it and then unsign up for it. And people do that. But there's occasional little special treats on there to keep you interested. That's everything. Thank you for listening. If you would like to donate to the show, if you'd like to support the show, then I really appreciate that. It helps me spend all of the time on the show that I have to spend on it these days. I really try and make it as intelligent. I try and research the questions. I try and watch loads of stuff. I try and get into as much detail on my guest's life as possible so that it's a cut above your average podcast interview or TV promo interview, whatever. And that all takes time, and that's all time that I could be earning money. So why not give me a little something for that? Support the show, comedianscomedian.com. Click on the PayPal button and you can pay £5, £10, £20, a pound a show or whatever else you think is appropriate. Or just come up, rustle it into my hand. That's it for now. Nazim Hussain next week. Brilliant Nazim Hussain, comic from Melbourne. A really interesting interview and a really nice guy. Very, very funny. Let's get back for the now to, again, meaningless, but let's stick it in. Let's get back for the now to Dara O'Brien.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Now, something I often ask my guests is I'd like to track the creation of material from the note-taking process to the kind of the engine that you put it into to then how it ends up on stage. And something I remembered when I was kind of prepping for this was, do you remember running into me at Ben Norris's birthday party, his 40th birthday?
I do, yes.
And we were chatting, and I remember we were having a particularly interesting chat because you asked me, at the time I was still doing some street shows, and you asked me how much I made. You remember this as well? I'm so glad. Yeah, I've been telling this story.
We swapped confidential knowledge.
We swapped confidential knowledge, and I have stayed true to that because you said how much you get from a street show, and I said, well, how much do you get from hosting an episode of Mock the Week? And I remember your face was a picture. You kind of went, that was nice.
It was a fair exchange of information.
But I think later during that conversation, you said something, I forget what the thing was, but you probably remember with the size of your brain. Mm-hmm. But I said, oh, that's funny. And I remember you went, do you reckon? And you whipped out your BlackBerry and you made a note of it.
Oh, really?
Yes,
oh,
absolutely.
I must have been at that stage.
It was something you'd said. I'm not claiming
you. Oh, okay. Well, yeah. It would be great if you said a funny thing and I said, that's funny.
Well, basically, I had this idea for some great Mark Addy banter. Apparently, it became stuff. No, but I remember at the time going, wow, even someone of Dara's stature, and I don't know how old Ben is, I can't date how long ago that party was. Yeah. It's got to be seven years ago. And I remember thinking, even someone of Dara's stature, you're kind of, even at a party, you're always on it making notes.
As far as I remember, by the way, the reason I know exactly how it is because that party took place, I'd had a conversation in a side street with my wife on the phone where she told me that she was pregnant with our first child.
Oh.
And then I went from that news to the party and I couldn't tell.
Of course, you can't say
yes.
You
can't say that. So that whole night was kind of a weird night anyway.
Yes.
So yeah, but no, because if I was, it would have been, actually, do you know what? I can tell you, because then it would have been the summer in the build-up to a tour for the 2008 tour. Mm-hmm. And that was exactly the point where you're just writing everything down into a notepad. Mm. There's on the phone that I have in front of me here, I have this year's skim of stuff that half an idea, things pops into your head, maybe this is something, scribble down into the notepad part on the phone.
Or is that, just on a boring app question, is that the one that comes bundled with the iPhone? There's the yellow line notes.
Yeah, actually, there's nothing,
Because that doesn't update automatically, does it? With like, if you lose your phone, you've lost your notes.
That's interesting. I don't know if they're in the
cloud. Because I did that for a while, and then I lost a phone, so I swapped to another one, simple
Lord.
Note.
Okay, so that would have been weird.
Every time you're near Wi-Fi, it sucks it all up into the cloud.
Stand-up ideas, 2010.
Go on. So this is the notes from 2010. Tell us what became stuff and what didn't. That would be a good way in.
Oh, I'm going to... Well, God, they're terrible.
If you wouldn't mind, I'd love to hear some.
Telling your dad, no, that is high def, and just turning the brightness up.
That's good.
Hanging out with Walken the next day, : at the soft play area.
Do you remember what that is?
I have no idea.
Christopher
Walken. I think I met him on Jonathan Ross show. And so the idea was that me and Walken would become pals, and the next day when I'm just at a soft play area with my children, I'm going, hey, honey, this is Christopher who we're hanging out. Oh my God. There are types of nail? There are types of wall? That's in this show.
Go on. So that was the observation. Do you remember where you made the observation?
On the 2nd of January 2010 is presumably the last one that was updated. So sometime in 2009, 2010, I wrote down the words, there are types of nail, there are types of wall. I think it was actually after I'd done a corporate for some hardware company indicating how little I knew about hardware and that I'm one of the people who would walk in and go, what, there are types of nail?
Yes.
And to which the man would say, of course there are types of nail. It depends on the type of wall. And I go, there are types of wall. And that's currently in the show. It comes in the whole thing about being grown up and stuff. Wow, God, that's how old that is. But
you, so talk to me, follow then that observation. Did that come up in the writing of this show that you looked back at those notes? Presumably or did it just was hovering out
in the back
head?
And then hovering in the back of my head as something to use. And when I needed, and when I and came up with it, I write the shows as a character, like a sitcom character.
I've heard you say that before. I think that's fascinating. Yes.
Yeah. And then,
so you know what your attitude is first and foremost. Yeah.
You want to know what your attitude is to a particular situation, and that makes it generally quite true. And then the actual funny stuff tends to evolve later. For example, that thing, that routine there is now in a thing of a general observation that is you get like that learning is easy when you're a child because everything is new and exciting, whereas learning when you're older, of course, it gets more difficult. I'm ignoring all brain science basically. The learning is difficult because nothing is new and everything is just a tiny variation of stuff you've already heard of, right? To which I dropped in this clearly 6-year-old thing about there are types of nail, there are types of wall, which finishes with him going, yes, what kind of wall is it? And I say the words, what does the wall, he says, what does the wall do? He says, I said, it stops people from seeing me have a poo. and that's the 2015 addition to that joke, which has clearly been sitting on that phone for 5 years. I remember once biting the inside of my mouth and going, oh God, there's a thing. I wonder where that would ever go.
Yes.
And it going into a routine about
proving
that we are not made in God's image.
Yes.
Yeah, and that we'd still bite the insides of our own mouths.
That is fascinating you mentioned that, because that was a specific question that I wrote down. I remember watching that bit and going, in what order did you come up with that? Was that, that's the sort of joke that I, or it sounds like it was the sort of joke that I call a cut and shut, where you've got a premise that you don't know what to do with, and then you look back over sort of ends of jokes that you haven't got a beginning
there's
for.
There's another one
that, and it comes in that way around.
Yeah, it ends up being a good, there are things that are illustrations of something, but you don't know what they're an illustration of yet.
Yes.
Yeah, there are.
That's a really nice way of putting it. Yeah absolutely. Because you've made the observation, but it's just kind of formless. It needs something to...
Exactly. It does, you know, because otherwise you're the guy going, hey, have you ever bitten the inside of your mouth? What's that all about?
Anything
you take that bit from the what's that all about and put it into some better context when you have a place for it.
Because if you didn't do that, the kind of the what's all that about, that's another inverted commas nightmare scenario.
Possibly, yeah.
So part of it is, because it reminds me of talking to Al Murray. He said when he writes... When he's got a topic, he'll write down a list of all the obvious things to say about that topic.
And scratch them
under
off.
The line, don't do anything on this.
Fine. That's good.
And it sounds like you have a similar approach to quality control.
Yeah, with an element of like, well, you don't want to be saying the same thing or the obvious thing. It kind of comes from a different direction. I suppose I don't pick the topic as much as I pick, say, the stance or I pick the situation that you generally tend to be led by. So it's your reaction to it.
Can you give us some examples from this tour of the stance?
The fear of being the fear of Berg. Oh, from this tour, from this tour, from this tour, from this tour, this tour, this. What the hell is this tour about?
I suppose there's a
situation, right? It would be there is a joke in the show about, or there's a story in the show about, buying a gift for my wife, and I was looking at different jewellery, and then going, "Oh, this is, I'll take this." And then the woman comes back after she'd wrapped it, and I said, "John, I'm also going to take the earrings." Having had this thing about, "Oh, you know, they're part of the same set. It'd be nice, you know, it was a big year, we'll loads of work anyway. I'll get that as well." And then the woman coming over, and I'm going, "I'll get this as well." And genuinely, the woman in Selfridges, one of the jewellery concessions in Selfridges, looking at me and going, "And is this for the same lady?"
Incredible.
And me going, oh my God. And then me spending a long time working on what the funniest reaction would be. There was a load of different versions.
The funniest reaction from you in the face of that.
Yeah, exactly. And how to extend that. And I had a number of different versions, and I had a number of... And then once it got bundled into... Essentially, this sounds an appalling, like funny things that have happened in Selfridges, because there was another guy who said to me, I went into a shop because I'm a big man and it's often very difficult to find a shirt of my size in somewhere like Selfridges. And I went into somebody just to cut to the chase and said, "I'm sorry, what size do you take in, what size do you have in shirts?" And the man says, "Me." I said, no, the shop. But then I was reversing, goes, "Yes, because I want to kill you and stuff you and mount you, and I want to know what they can say." But actually, that never quite worked enough.
Okay.
Whereas more came out of the other one, so it ended up just being that one story, and ended up being in a very contrived second. But so it ended up being about reactions to that, and do other departments of Selfridges do that, and that led to another thing, and led to an audience thing, whatever. But it is about standing there. I have to look gormless, and I have to, my reaction has to be that of somebody attempting to be sexually sophisticated in the way that she presumes I am, because I'm buying diamonds for another lady.
I see. So it's funny. Yes, it's funnier if you're kind of pretending that you're the kind of guy who would, the sort of James Bond womanizer.
That's exactly it. Yes. The phrase is, the James Bond type would know what to say in this situation.
Yes.
And whereas I am now flailing around, and I think.
And when you say you've looked at those different possibilities, have you tried different possibilities on
preview.
Stage?
Yeah,
or have you sat and written 10 different versions?
Yeah, I'd done both of those things and then previewed it. And then the preview process is basically where it it wasn't working that well, so other things got dumped. Ideally, all shows expand, I find, for me anyway. And if you set a kind of a nice schedule, like it was convenient last year that I sort of said by Kilkenny in the start of June, I will have 30 minutes. I'd aim for 30 minutes by Kilkenny, 45 by Latitude, an hour, maybe an hour and a half by Edinburgh. And then take it in September, do loads of it. Yeah, so I had that thing worked out. In many ways, it's the same show at 2 hours as it was at half an hour when it was in Edinburgh.
Okay, because all of the
all
bits
just
of...
expand. Right. They all just, in the telling, and obviously not, there's other things, they sparked off and different digressions appeared, but it's essentially the bare bones idea. I can't remember me thinking of a new routine to put in, because once the basic ideas came out of the throw shit at the wall process led to the 30 minutes and then just doing it over and over and over.
Okay. I wanted to talk to you specifically about, I've had a lot of people on the show who've been on Mock the Week, who've had very different sort of experiences on it. But from the point of view of being the host for the last 10 years, do you find, I was going to ask, do you find it, I mean, it's obviously a different job being host.
Yes.
Do you find it easier? Do you find that there are advantages and disadvantages?
There's a huge advantage in as much as I don't have to do those rounds, specifically the last round, the walking out one, where people have to have all of those gags for on those three topics, right? Because I find them both limiting and also just wreck your head to have all those gags on this thing. Where, and for a while, because we're in like the fourth generation of Mock the Week within this 10 years, the generations being the early years, the John Oliver was on this, the Roy Bremner, you know, God, Linda Smith, a bit like this is a long time back, Sandy Toksvig was all the for the first couple of years, then the Frankie becoming dominant, the three or 4 years of that, then people on the way to stadiums as guests, which was Mickey Flanagan
Milliken.
And people coming in, and like, you know, where we were like this. We were part of those shows that were throwing out a generation of touring comics.
Yes.
And we would come in, Greg Davis or whatever, or Jack Whitehall would come in and do a couple of them or a few of them, and then move on to better things. And now we've got a distinctly younger generation, and it's Rob Beckett and Ramesh and
Josh,
Ryan,
and Sarah
Josh
Pascoe.
And Sarah Pascoe.
Yes.
So we're very much in the fourth generation of that, which is the most enjoyable because it's the most conversational, and the least enjoyable in many ways was, well, the first was it's formatted to shit at the start, and then it was Frankie doing the seagull dramatically.
Yeah, that
landed.
Is a phenomenally large seagull.
like just as I was saying that about Frankie, his soul animal.
And we are arrived. In Scotland.
Just landed.
He's familiar.
But it was so Frankie was doing that thing, and it became very staccato and bang 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 bang, and tailored to his particular brand of genius. But it was very difficult to be conversational, and then it's finally got that. So now I'm enjoying it, but actually I haven't necessarily. It's been a gig, and it's been the gig I've had, and there's an element of, you know, not going, oh, I shall seek until you find the exact correct vehicle for me. I don't turn down work. I like work. That may be another reason why. But now it feels just more conversational and much more fun.
Do you think when it was, and we can call it less conversational, I think the word that I most hear is when it's combative, when it was in the Frankie phase. I'm not sort of saying that Frankie's entirely responsible for that. But the story the binding thing that I feel like is the attitude of the circuit towards it, say the attitude of most of the comics that I speak, is that people would say I'd be doing it, and someone next to me would be kind of batting me in the leg, going, I want my turn. Do you know what I mean? So there'd be a real sense of I've got to get it out. I've got DVD sales. I've got sort of things.
Yeah.
Do you recognise that was the case? And if that the case, do you feel that your role as host, did you contribute to that? Because, or maybe not contribute, but did you succeed
did
as a result of that?
An atmosphere that was hateful and inappropriate.
But you were able to just cream You know, you were able to say whenever you wanted. You could cut people off. No one's going to interrupt you.
No, absolutely. And then they had to just sit there because I had to finish off things, and they didn't know I wasn't going to do points and rounds. I do points or rounds of furniture of the show. There is an element of that was the case that I also had to get in. Because there was a point where it's just where, particularly where his edits was very much around Frankie and his work, that you kind of go, no, literally, you could have anyone do this. My job, this is not particularly.
Yes, because your job is just to go, okay, Frankie, time out.
Yeah, exactly. And now who's the point? Here's the thing. And who's, but then there was also appeared during the combative bits where I was vainly, possibly, but still trying to traffic cop it, as it were, shush one side to bring the other side in and trying to make it. So it probably, I'd like to think it could have been a lot worse because there's seven voices speaking.
Have you also got an earpiece on?
Yeah, but actually, it wasn't as if there was that much. A bit of that coming in. We have enough on this round, so you can wrap it up if you want.
Okay.
They kind of go and move on to the next topic. Maybe we've enough on that topic. They would say that. But it's a producer-made show. Like, I mean, I don't book the show. I don't pick the topics for it. And this has been a bit of a pain in the arse at times for me, you know, that they've chosen things that they think we should write about rather than us talking about the things we want to. And the stuff that people remember isn't our take on, you necessarily on Clegg or Miliband. It's the Megabus, or the stuff that the joke I still hear back from people are the silly jokes that went off with Dick, or me and Ed doing, you know, private browsing. Those are the ones that people
like. That seemed really, the private browsing bit I really liked, because that was the opposite of a combative. That was just you dissolving into giggles with a mate riffing.
Yeah.
I felt like, oh, that's, let's have that show.
Although we've gone more towards that, because that came 2 weeks after a similar kind of one about me playing the harp nude. Again, it helps if Ed's there. And with the lads in, there was, you know, and but all those new faces, it's gone much more in that direction.
I mean, you say the lads, ..
Yeah, apologies, sorry, because the exact story I was going to illustrate it with was Sarah Pascoe turning to a message and going, you know, in years to come, we'll be able to say we knew you, or we worked with you back in the day. I don't know what it was in reference. Thanks, Sarah, where am I in this story? And Rob went, well, you're in court, obviously. In the kind of jolly, matey, backslappy kind of way. But the representation of it, there is a narrative, and this is, you know, let's say, not to pick a random name of a leading member of the comedy firmament who has a tendency to place things in narratives, but Stuart Lee's view of these things, that it's all very, you know, contrived and driven by DVD sales and tours and all that kind of stuff like that. My view of the current state of it is that more people are out doing shows, which makes it very competitive in terms of getting ticket sales, but more people are doing long shows than ever were. And this is an inordinately healthy thing, and we're not even close to how many bands are out around. But we're a better entertainment process because we've done our time and we've trained. And people write long shows, and they finally get, like, I mean, it used to be the case you get to the end of an Edinburgh run, and you couldn't go anywhere with it. You'd be going, well, this is the last time I'll get to do this show. And now everyone gets to do. And it's tough on the clubs, I know, in terms of bills and all that, like whatever, because people are desperately rushing to get to an arts centre to their art. But people just do get to do their shows, get to do full shows. So, I'm not saying Mockdoo is part of five or six shows that contributed to that. But I think I'm happier in it. Now, there have been times that I've gone, I could take or leave this now. But last year, for example, it was like, this is The Apprentice, I'm going to free up some time next year. And The Apprentice was actually a duller thing to do, even though it's an easier show to be funny on. But it was like, I've done this now a few times. Whereas these Mock the Week, it's going to be quite interesting.
About the issue of spontaneity.
Yeah.
Given that we know in a tour show, for example, as you say, certain parts of the chat at the beginning are spontaneous. Certain parts of them are opportunities for spontaneity. But you know you've got a topper.
Depends on some routines. But the chat is spontaneous. Yeah, there is material.
You've got a way out through material.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So with that in mind, and I'm constantly staggered by how some audience members, like, we take it for granted that, well, they know that I say this every night. This is an act. And some people don't. I just wanted to talk about the idea with Mock the Week that it is unprepared. Like, I don't think as a show it ever says this stuff was all made up before a live studio audience or something.
Yeah.
But we know as comics that, you know, a packet is sent out of, like, this is the stuff we're going to talk about.
Yeah, and it's a news quiz. So there's, we know what the news stories are. We've said to them, listen, this is the stuff that we'd like. These are the, you know, the images we will have or whatever. The manner in which I would regard as unscripted is it has essentially seven people who have things they would like to say, then weaving all that into a coherent whole, and then using, if somebody says a thing, jumping off that into something else. So there's things that people come in and go, oh, that reminds me of something, or here's the thing I thought about yesterday, and maybe this is a thing, and then it'll go off, and ideally it'll go off in other directions.
And what pitfalls are there from the position of having been at the centre of, literally at the centre of the V-shape for 10 years? What sorts of things do you see comics who, maybe if it's their first or second time on the show, what sorts of things don't work? What mistakes do you see people making?
It depends how likely the crowbar is wielded at times, and sometimes it does feel like somebody's trying to get
an existing bit
into the show, and that's fine, because then we all know, we can all see it, and we all have to sort of sit back and listen to the bit. And sometimes it's grand, but it feels, and actually the greater one is, and particularly at the moment now that I've finally pushed it where we go, is that they're not listening, and that they cut off a thing which is developing.
Yes,
because they cut across because they said, "Oh, okay, it's grand." And very experienced comics do that because they want their time in the thing, and you're going, "No, this was actually turning into something nice, and there's enough of us around this table to create a genuine, spontaneous moment that we can do here." All of the things that people remember and quote back, and this including to a certain extent Frankie, they remember Frankie for his general Frankie's persona, but there's only a handful of the jokes because there's so many of them, and there was just staccato bursts like whatever. The things that people remember are the things that develop legs, the things that came from nowhere.
That's good to hear. That's a very positive aspect of it. That improv thing of like, try and make your neighbour look good.
The things that quoted back to me constantly on the, and even today, I think whatever, would be the fact that I look like the Megabus man, which was, again, just all came in the studio, private browsing, occasionally naked. No, my large head. There was a thing once about me having a very large head. And then once Russell said that, I read so about Connie Hook, and they said, oh, you must love Connie Hook. And then it became this, they all piled in on that, like whatever. Yes. There were these sort of little jokes, and they were the ones that, for good or for bad, were actually the things that people remembered and people engage with, like whatever. And so all this discussion that we've ever had, I remember tweeting this picture that people have about I got it back today about something about how I look like the man on the back of the Megabus. And I'm not sure if you've ever seen.
I'm trying to visualize him. All I can think of is the Monopoly man or the Pringles man. That guy, I can see that with the right hat.
The fact
on.
That somebody still has that image,
yes.
And today I tweeted, sorry, because today the theatre today, the Edinburgh Playhouse, the Lothian Buses, the local bus company, said, Dara Breen's in town, and listed the numbers of the different buses that go past the Edinburgh Playhouse, of which there are 40. And then loads of people sent me the picture from 4 years ago of course, looking like the Megabus guy. So that is. The next tweet is, everybody's already done the Megabus joke, right? But this is all the discussion of it being a hateful show or a misogynistic show, or they're deliberately excluding women from the show, and all these kind of discussions that it's been involved in and been, you know, a little bit of a, you know, and that somebody going about, you know, the kind of stuff it does is really hard. And you're going, no, this, honestly, this, let us just remember that people actually watch the show. This is the stuff that they take from it, and it's the silliness and the ridiculousness of that. So yeah, it is, it's those silly improvisational things where the mask of the comedy of, here are my one liners and here we are, these young Turks trying to make a name for ourselves by being belligerent, slipped when that just went, and it was just us being silly, are actually the stuff that I hear more back about.
The question that I normally round off an interview with, and I like to, it's a little kind of lull them into a false sense of security sort of thing. The question that I would normally ask is, I like to ask people, are you happy?
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
And I think the impression I get is that I almost want to ask you, are you just nailing this? Are you just nailing the shit out of comedy and life in your career? Because you work constantly to huge rooms, to enormous respect. You're someone who I don't even feel like, with a lot of comics, you can go, oh, you know, Frankie's angry about this, or Russell's angry about that, or Russell Brand is angry about that, or, you know, Russell Howard has his own sort of like a naivety that he sort of pushes. I don't know if I could even kind of write down what your angle is. Do you know what I mean? And yet, you are phenomenally successful and hardworking, and you seem happy. Are you happy?
Yes. Okay. First things. Yes. On a personal level, yes, I'm happy. And independent of any kind of outside personal stuff. Yes, I am. To performing shows to audiences who enjoy them and who know me, and I get to the gratification of spending months writing the work and then getting to do the work. And that's very, very nice. You're catching me at the end of particularly intense 7 weeks or so of the tour. If you'd asked me 3 weeks ago, I probably would have been a bit more weighed down by just, it's the town after town after town, and I'm a little bit older now, and my children are a little bit older now, and just beginning to feel that's probably not, you know. So I think this may be the last of the really huge tours, by which I mean the 150 dates might go down to 100 dates over an equal period of time.
A piffling 100
dates. Yeah. But it would be, you know, suddenly go from 5 to 4 nights, whatever, with the travel. And so it would seem a little bit more manageable. That's the one shadow in all this. I'm as neurotic as anyone else, whatever. I can't work out if I'm at the bottom of mainstream or at the top of cult in terms of where I am.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
Because I'm
so
not...
you still find ways to berate yourself
of
about
course,
your...
Of course, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What a relief, everyone.
I mean, it's very nice to be on two rather than one and not have that level of intrusion of fame. And also to be able to do stuff like stargazing and it not be like this jarring, oh my God, but what's his... that's not where we position you. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, you're doing that. Because we don't have so strong an image of you that we think this is really difficult.
This doesn't seem jarring.
Just all right, okay, run, you're there. It's carved up because I've kept it relatively loose. But I don't sit there and go, I wish I was doing stadiums or arenas because they're not nice and they don't suit my style anyway. Mm. So actually, the level of popularity I have is exactly matched to the kind of rooms I want to play, and I've always wanted to play. So that's a relief. It might nag at you if you're going, God, I want to be. I have ideas for what would be a brilliant O2 show, but I've never been able to shift enough tickets for O2. That's fine. These rooms are great. And you know, as it works down, which it will work down, there's a routine in the show about showbiz death, so it always does nag at you. Going, this will go at some stage.
Yes.
At some point, I won't be able to still carry on playing these things. I measure out my life in how many more times I'll play Vicar Street.
Really?
Yeah. I've done it 130 times or something. There is a number of times I will get to play that room. And I don't know what the number is now, and I hope it's not for a good long time that I can still, you know... I had this with Leeds City Varieties once, that if I ever go to Leeds and do City Varieties and I can't get that many in, I'll just drive home and I'll climb in beside my wife and go, that's over. that'll be that, you know. So you have that, like, that is...
And if you imagine that, is that a good feeling, or is that, like... I've done what I set out to achieve.
Yeah, there's a touch of it. I think, you know, because I'll do a... Even the fact that I've got a fifth DVD and I'm very happy with the shows, and I think they're solid and they're good shows. So far, I don't believe, by all means, contradicted in when I... but I think there's... Yeah, I think I've done good tours for those times, and the work has been good. I think I am already, to a certain extent, in gravy in terms of... And so people go, what are you going to do next? You're going to do this, if I could continue doing this for a little bit longer at least. Because you don't know, you know, at some point, they've seen you. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is they're acts I really enjoyed, and I go, but I've seen them 2 or 3 times now. I've sat in the room with them a few times. I get where he's coming from and stuff. That may yet happen. You can write just as good a show.
Yes, if it's attitude driven, you've seen the sitcom.
It can be particular.
You know what the attitude is.
Yeah,
yes.
It is. And I haven't deliberate. This is just, I'm just being me on stage anyway. So but I always used to skip around from being angry. And there's like, even the show, there's a fake sad, but then there's an angry bit. And then there's a jokey bit. So I was very happy to take as many colours into that.
So how does one of the happiest men in comedy,
right.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
When you have the tougher gigs, when you have the moments of self-doubt, what's the secret to getting out of it? Do you have what do you have, a mantra? Is it just a thing you've been born with that you go,
right. You don't switch. You bask and you kick, you do the kick the cat thing and you get angry. You're carrying on working, you've got other gigs. and then there'll be another gig, and there'll be another moment where it works and you get a laugh off something. You just carry on.
Thanks, Dara.
So thank you very much to Dara. Very much appreciate him coming along. He didn't come along. I came along, but I very much appreciate him letting me into that palatial 5-star suite he was in that glorious Edinburgh hotel. And we got on really well, and he's just a really, really nice guy. So very, very pleased to have him on. And what a brain! My God, what a brain! What a comic mind! What a brilliant synthesis of kind of technique and natural funniness. Like, that's the most fascinating thing about Dara. He really gets all of the tricks, but he sort of doesn't need all of the tricks because he's so funny. So combining all of the kind of the technique and his natural comic ability is just devastating. There are few people who I would be as happy to watch do like 2 hours as Dara, because I know that I wouldn't even look at my watch. Thank you very much to him. Thanks to you for listening. You can donate at comedianscomedian.com. And you can just press that. I was going to do a /, but there isn't one. You can donate at comedianscomedian.com. And you can hit the PayPal button. Give me a little something to help. As I've been listening to lots of American podcasts recently, and they all say, to help keep the lights on. That's right. Unless you donate, the sun is going to be extinguished. So do that. And Nazim Hussain next week. Thanks to Nathan Wood for co-producing the show. Thanks to James Hingley, Homebrew, for working on the website, which is new. I've been talking about this for ages. It's taken far longer than we thought because we've managed to make it do all sorts of clever things. So that is going to be released very soon. Keep an eye out and join the Facebook group if you'd like little extra hints and updates. Join the Facebook group if you would like a say in the great T-shirt debate. We've refined the choices now. I'm going to put some new ComCom Pod merch T-shirts up there. You can help me decide what design we're going to go with. That's sort of everything, really. We know about next week's guest. Come and see Deliso. Come and see Adam Buxton. SoHoTheatre.com. Put the code FAFF in, F-A-F-F, to get 25% off your tickets for that on the 7th of July. And that is everything.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.